Alright, hey everyone, this is Jerry Fabianic on KYGT, LPFM 102.7, 103.9, and coming at you from the very center of the universe. And how's it feel to be in the center of the universe?
A little scary.
Why?
Well, I'm not exactly a person who seeks the limelight.
Oh, well, you know, we're in the dim light here in the Goat Studio, and the Goat Jack here, so that's the voice of Ann Nye West. And we're going to be talking about the work she helped her daughter, Mairead West, put
granddaughter.
Together. Granddaughter. Okay. Sorry, Mairead. Yeah, sorry, Ann, you know, but granddaughter put together. And everything goes around that, her background. And we want to talk, too, also about, boys, getting younger boys into reading and what a little bit of research shows. And, you know, we'll put the disclaimer right up front. Okay. Not pros on this. I was a teacher and so on. So I do have that background. But, I'm not, an authority on young children's literature, but enough to know that we need to motivate boys, get them to read. So, anyway, Ann and I will be talking about that. This is Writer's Talk on the Rabbit Hole, and I am sponsoring this portion of the program. So you can read more about my work, Sisyphus Wins, by going to my website at jerryfabianic.com. So, Ann, welcome. You say it's
thank you, Jerry.
You come up from Denver. Good ride.
We did.
All right.
Very foggy coming over the hill.
Yes, and we're loving it. It's called rain and, almost snow, so we'll take it here. But Where's My Football? It was actually written by Mairead Nye, and when she was 12, and she illustrated the book. It's a Lift the Flap Board book for little kids. We want to talk about that for toddlers, about a little boy named Johnny who lost his football and is looking all over the place for it. But where can it be? And Mairead says her little brother Johnny inspired her to write it, and her grandmother, who's sitting here now, helped her get it published. So we're going to talk about that. Mairead says that she noticed a lot of kiddie books had too much story per picture, and wanted something simple that it could be read, by Johnny. So she designed a book with that in mind, so little children can lift the flaps and follow along with Johnny as he searches for his lost football under his bed, a chair pillow, a trampoline, an upturned trash can, and in his closet as their parents read the story to them. So we'll talk about how you can get the book and everything, too, as we go on. But this must have been a pretty amazing experience for you. Your daughter or granddaughter comes in and says, Grandma, I want to write a book. And how did you react to this when she approached you about the idea?
Well, actually, we were visiting the family in Idaho when they were living there. And her mother, my daughter-in-law, told me that she had written this book and drawn the pictures for it. And she told me, her name is Siobhan, and she told me that she thought that Mairead should get it published. Well, I do have a bit of a background in publishing. I published a lot of newsletters and brochures, and when I worked for the Office of Energy Conservation in the state government, I did publish several books there, the Renewable Energy Handbook, the Solar Energy Handbook, the Conservation Handbook. But so I had some experience, and so I thought that I could probably do this for her. So that's how it all came about. Mm-hmm. But she started, it was a bunch of crayon drawings and colored pencils. And so she gave me all of these pieces of paper that she'd done mm-hmm. the drawings on and written the text on. And so I took it back I have a little public relations and marketing business at the time. And so I had all the equipment to scan the pictures and the text. And so I scanned all of that and I put it together in book form and sent it over to her to look at. And so over the course of about 2 years, we went back and forth with the drawings and what the text should say and how it should get laid out. And we added some pages to it. In one of the illustrations, her dad is playing with her brother football, and he's got pants that are what he called high water pants. And he says, well, you could at least give me pants that go down to my shoes. So we made some adjustments to the illustrations. And so so it was just a great, fun project for us to work on. Even though it was long distance, I would send it back and forth by mail and email. And when we'd visit, I'd bring copies. So
yeah, genesis of a book.
That's right. And so anyway, we got it all to where we wanted it. But it was still quite crude, and so I needed to get it into professional form. So I had been working with a graphic artist at a printer that did some of my publications, and so I talked to him about whether or not he could upgrade the illustrations so they would look professional, and I could typeset the book with my own desktop publishing program, but he needed to do the illustration. So between the two of us, I went out to his house on Sunday mornings out in Green Valley Ranch, and we would talk about how it should look, and he would get the illustrations brought up to professional level. Mm-hmm. And so then we had a PDF of the book in the format that it would look like in real form. And so then I needed to figure out how to get the book from this PDF to a physical book. So I called a children's authors and illustrators organization in Denver to see if they could help out. And they recommended me to the Colorado Independent Publishers Association. So I went to my first meeting in the fall of 2011. And I joined that very day. And over the years, SEPA helped me find Mike Daniels, who was working for Four Color Press, and he helped me get it published. But I didn't really need an editor because it was just, you know, a simple children's book. But SEPA was just wonderful. Over the course of attending meetings over the next 2 years and networking with my fellow SEPA members, I learned everything I needed to know about publishing the book, how to get the copyright, the ISBN number, how to market it, how to create a website, and of course the energy in that organization and the support from that organization is just terrific.
As we discovered, and that's how you and I met, was at SEPA, and that's an acronym for Colorado Independent Publishers Association, is that publishing a work, any work, is a complex operation.
Yes.
There's so many different moving parts there. For example, you said in your particular work here, Where's My Football, you really didn't need an editor. But other children's books might.
Oh, yes.
But you still need the graphic. And what I've discovered, because mine's a work of fiction, so it's simply a story. Now, it's very complex, and you put a lot of time in there. But that's very different than putting together a children's book with illustrations so that the words match the picture and the words match the child's level.
Yes.
So if you're writing for a three-year-old, you're going to use different vocabulary than you would for a six-year-old.
Right.
So you discovered all this.
That's right. That's right. I did. One of our members, Nancy Hill, who was our treasurer at one point, she writes children's books. I think her publishing company is Pie in the Sky Publishing Company. And I ran it by her and to see if she thought it had legs, and she did. And Yeah, and we did a little test marketing with some children, and they really liked it, and they thought it was great. So,
And you talk about this book is different in a sense of it's not just a flip-the-page book, but it's got, like, insets you flip out.
That's right.
Okay. Explain why and how that came about and why that's an important piece to the book itself, to the work.
It is a kinesthetic book. It's an interactive book for children. In the case of little boys, it might be particularly good because they tend to be wiggly and squirmy a little more than little girls do. And so for them to have but even with little girls, for any little toddler to have the tactile sensation of lifting a flap and looking underneath to see a surprise under there encourage them and makes reading fun for them. And it isn't just words on a page or pictures. It's interactive.
Now, the idea started with your granddaughter, Lorraine, and it took on a life of its own. So here you go down, and I call the show here The Rabbit Hole, so this is right, I was talking the rabbit hole. So you went down the rabbit hole on this.
I did.
And learned an enormous amount, not only in the particular production, but the whole process of producing a book,
right,
getting it out there,
right,
you know, all the intricacies of it, but also the appropriateness of literature for children and so forth. Were you expecting this?
I was not. I thought this was just a fun little book for toddlers to have, and they could lift the flaps and look for the football, and it was colorful and entertaining, and it was a good way for children and their parents to connect, and children to, but as I went along, people would say, well, this book has messages of self-reliance and perseverance in it. Johnny looks for his football and keeps on looking for it. He doesn't get discouraged. Well, he does get discouraged in the middle of the book, but his mother gives him milk and cookies and encourages him to keep looking, and he does, and she doesn't help him, and he just keeps looking and looking until he finds it. And so that message of self-reliance and perseverance is there that people have pointed out to me. Also, several people have said that I've had some educators come up to me and said, this is really a good book for getting my little boys in my class to read because I'm having a hard time with that. And this is something that would really appeal to them. And so I learned that evidently there's a problem getting little boys to read. And there's a number of reasons for that, and I've done a little bit of research. I'm not an expert, certainly, on the subject, but I've looked up why that might be. And So I've learned a lot about that, and so it's taken me down that path too, as a that this might be a good vehicle or a tool for children, for parents to get their little boys to enjoy reading.
And we as authors have to, because if you put something out there that is not based in sound research or fact, history, whatever it is, then your credibility is gone. So you needed to do that. So while you might not have a doctorate, in this various fields of, you know, pedagogical development, etc., you still learn quite a bit, just from your, even from your own personal experience of being a mother and a grandmother, but the background behind it. What did you discover then, learn, about what hooks little boys in? We talked about the tactile.
Right.
Okay, the flipping of pages. So the hands
right.
are, I think of a boy way back when I first started teaching, he was in seventh grade, and I'll tell you, his hands were flying everywhere. I swear he would have been a professional drummer, but that is that nervous energy there. So we talked about that, but interest-wise also.
Well, boys need to feel, what I've learned in reading is that they need to feel a sense of competence or developing competence. And if reading doesn't contribute to that, then they don't see much point in it. And so for a little boy to lift the flaps and find the surprises underneath and then eventually find the football would be a feeling of accomplishment for him.
Right.
As boys get older, they want to read books that... For example, they might, if they are interested in magic tricks, they would be learning mm-hmm. how to do magic tricks. They would really be attracted to a book on how to do magic tricks.
And then as they develop older, you know, they might want to read a biography of Houdini, for example.
That's right.
Yeah.
Or they might want to read about things that they're interested in, sports, mm-hmm. Race cars, one of the experts that I read about said boys are interested in books about things that bite, run, win, blow up, or gross you out. So
it doesn't change much, by the way, too, as they get older.
Another thing that I learned is that that boys seem to fall behind girls in reading in school. And one of the reasons is that they're often assigned books where the protagonists are not male. They're more female. They're books that are more appealing to girls. And so to read books that are more appealing to boys would be mm-hmm. that are more have more male protagonists in them, and more action and that kind of thing would be more of interest. There is a series of books out that my grandsons, actually my granddaughters, have read as well. The Percy Jackson series, the author has taken Greek myths mm-hmm. and set them in a put them in a contemporary setting in New York City, and it's quite and it's the children are acting out playing out the Greek myths, and so they're learning the Greek myths in a way that's appealing to the children to read. And I think there's been a movie or two made on that series as well.
Yeah, and you do find, and I learned through my experience about, as an English teacher, a language arts teacher, in middle school English teacher in high school, that you can almost get the girls to read pretty much anything. You put, you know, whatever the short story or novel is going to be, they're pretty much going to, they could just go down that path. Boys is like pulling teeth, and then, of course, they, you know, skip over. And I discovered something. I was teaching freshmen at the time. And I was needed to teach the Odyssey. We talk about Greek mythology and so forth, too. And the Odyssey and the Iliad, I mean, it is, they're adventurous stories. But they're also written in poetry and so forth. And it could be tedious, you know, and so on. Okay, how am I going to do this? Now, I'm a big fan of Joseph Campbell. And I was reading, and you know, Star Wars is totally the epic hero. And so, okay, so I'm going to show them Star Wars. So I get, oh, we get to watch Star Wars and say, but you will know Star Wars. And of course we did. I mean, watch, but it was the story of Luke and that adventure, what gets him out there. And once they start to understand this and start to buy into how stories are developed and the plot and the complexity of the characters and so forth, that adventure and the risk and everything, they really start to appreciate literature even more. And I think this is what you do when you start off with, even at that toddler stage, and you start flipping the flap. I don't know. It seems to me that it's like buy into where they are and hook their interest, and then you got them.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so right. It seems you're doing that. So you said anything is buggy, squishy, and nasty. And
runs, bites, wins, blows up.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, they like the drama and the action. And one of the things that I found is that the rise of electronic entertainment evidently has drawn children away from reading. And they don't read as much because they have these distractions with Xboxes and video games and things like that. And so one expert that I read suggested that we bridge that gap from the electronic entertainment to books to make them also as exciting and interesting to boys as the electronic entertainment is.
Yeah. And to get them to move from, or at least to understand that when something is put on video, it could be on your Xbox, it could be, you know, a movie, the imaginative part in large part is done for you. You don't need to imagine. It's already out there because the director and everyone has already provided it for you, which also starts to douse the individual's imagination. But if you give them a blank screen and say, okay, create your own image. I don't know. Maybe that's something to think about, you know, how you're doing your work, you know, with that, you know, to get them to start using their imagination.
Well, one of the things that I had hoped my journey with Maraid would do would be inspire other mothers and grandmothers and children to do something similar, to get their children and grandchildren, if they have an interest in writing and illustrating, to go ahead and do that. I've also had a number of parents and grandparents come up to me and said, oh, I've always wanted to do this. And I'm hoping that the fact that I was able to do it will encourage them that they can do it too.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and because it started with an idea with Maraid, and you say, okay, this shouldn't be that all that complex.
Right. And it was.
And and we'll come back to your publishing and some other works you helped get out there and are helping there. But I'm going to talk more about the boys also, and developmentally, because It's not just psychologically. It's also physiologically, too. And have you done research on that?
Well, one of the things that I found was that boys are on average more physically aggressive and less compliant than girls. And so these differences can affect reading acquisition in two important ways. They often have a harder time adjusting to the behavioral constraints of elementary school, which makes it harder for them to focus on learning. And that can negatively impact their attachment to school and maybe make them less eager to read just to please parents or peers. Mm-hmm. Today's curriculum, I understand, or I have read, is tougher than it was 20 years ago, and I've seen that in my own grandchildren. They're doing algebra in the elementary school. I didn't get algebra until I was in high school. Mm-hmm. So, and preschoolers today study subjects first graders studied back then, but young boys are not wired, according to what I've read, for these early verbal challenges, and as a result, they fall behind in the early grades and often don't catch up. As they reach the fourth and fifth grade, the texts they are reading become more challenging, and they don't receive the support they need to understand or interpret what they are reading. So they don't think they're as smart as they used to be, and they begin to see themselves as non-readers. One of the things that I read was that teachers, understandably, will group their students into reading groups. And so if, in the case of a little boy, if he's a slow reader, he'll go in the slow reading group. Well, the kids all know what the levels of the groups are. And right. So one of the suggestions that I, one expert I read suggested that perhaps students be grouped differently than by ability level. And I don't know how that would work in the classroom. You could speak to that better than I could. Because, I mean, when you've got 20 or 30 kids, you have to have a certain efficiency, I understand. But you put a little boy or any child in a low ability reading group, then that's how they're going to see themselves.
Yeah, there's all kinds of arguments on both sides in the sense that, one, if we start grouping them by the bluebirds and the blackbirds and the redbirds and everything like that, you're stigmatized right from the beginning. But also that if you're a slower reader or a different type, and male or female, and you're put with others that are really like, you know, they can scan a page and get it, then they also will feel intimidated by right. that, you know, right. hetero type of group
yes.
as well.
Right.
You know, so do we differentiate? How do we differentiate yeah. in there?
It's a challenge, mm-hmm. no doubt.
Mm-hmm. You know, so, yeah.
I understand also that phonetically that boys need more help with sounding out words so that when they're first learning to read, so mm-hmm. that they can read better. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, one of the other things that I found out.
And it goes back, and don't want to go off into tangents here on, again, the pedagogical bent on it and so on. But where we tend to associate, you know, in our heads, reading, literature, writing more with the feminine, with the girls.
Yes.
Math, science with boys.
Yes.
And we're trying to break the barriers down in both. Okay.
Well, that's one of the things I found is that since many elementary and even high school teachers, although there are more male high school teachers, since many of them are women, you know, boys associate reading with women. It's their mothers, usually, who read to them or their mm-hmm. grandmothers. Mm-hmm. My husband, our grandchildren's grandfather, did a lot of reading to our grandchildren. And they begin to associate with a feminine thing. And on television, women are running off to book clubs all the time. There isn't a lot attention given to men who read. That just doesn't seem to be popular in our culture, you know, showing men reading. And so one of the things that I read is that it would be good for men in the schools, maybe to start a boys' book club or a reading club for boys at the in both the elementary school and the high school, and choose the kinds of books that will appeal to boys. And another thing would be for teachers to assign activities related to the book so that it's a hands-on thing and they're doing something and they aren't just reading the book and then sitting around and talking about it. That, you know, if they have something to do in relationship to the book, that that might make it more interesting to them. Another thing is to make reading a family thing and having the family read together. Mm-hmm. And so boys get the idea that reading is a male thing too. It isn't just a female thing.
Right, because we tend to stereotype in that, and we associate in a gender-based way, and we brought that up, math, science, boys, reading, girls, and to start breaking those barriers down there, well, how do we do that? Is that if, you know, if a boy grows up surrounded by male adults who don't read and are only read the sports page, or, you know, that sort of thing there, at best, that's about, you know, then that's the message to them. And so therefore, and that's the problem then for the boys who are into reading. Because when I grew up, I loved reading. I loved writing. That's what I ended up an English teacher, right? And I'm writing novels and all this other stuff. And math and science were killing me. Math was too much, but science, oh my God. Now I love it, but back then it was like, man, you know, what's the point of all this stuff here? And how do we start breaking those barriers down? And I think you start doing this right from the early age, like you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's my hope with this, one of the hopes with this book. Like I said, or like you said, it started off as just a fun little book, and maybe it has more importance in helping little boys learn to enjoy reading from a very early age.
Yeah, a little thought here. I wonder if there's a little girl out there who would like to read Where's My Football and start flipping it.
Well, I've had a number of parents buy it for their daughters and their granddaughters also who like football. Absolutely.
Wonderful.
So it isn't just for boys, but...
Yeah. You were talking, one of the teachers, by the way, I just want to just remind our listening audience, this is Jerry Fabianic on KYGT LP FM 102.7, 103.9, and visiting here with Ann Nye West on Writer's Talk on the Rabbit Hole, and, you know, talking about children's literature in particular here, and a focus on Where's My Football, the little toddler book there. But any rate, Ann, you had talked and you said there was a reviewer for the book.
Well, one of the other things that I found out in marketing my book, I went out to the community autism store in Aurora, Colorado, and a suburb of Denver. Of course, everybody knows that. And she was Shannon Sullivan, who's co-founder of the store and is the mother of an autistic child, was quite excited about having the book in her store. And she did write a testimonial for the book, which is up on my website, on the book's website. And she said, the simple, colorful illustrations depict Johnny's changing emotions as he loses, searches for, and eventually finds his lost football. The lift the flaps help children to engage with the fun, relatable story. Every child has lost something and has to look for it. And the book includes wonderful functional vocabulary, prepositions, and lots of useful nouns that create many opportunities for language development and communication. The bright, colorful illustrations give them the opportunity to explore color and shape, and the lift the flaps provide a sensory experience which can stimulate attention and foster calm. Sharing this book is a good way for a parent to connect with their children. So that was a very nice testimonial, and it's another avenue that I hadn't considered when we did this book, that this might be a good book for children on the autism spectrum.
And you get someone like Shannon, who is firsthand with autism in this example here, and what she was picking up on there, the language itself, the colors, the simplicities, all those factors come in that the vast, vast majority of us, unless we're trained in that or have personal experience with, let's say, an autistic child, are not even aware of. we're not, it's not even on our radar. We simply look at it as a beautiful picture book there. Right. But for someone it is, and you start saying, because, you know, an older person, okay, you might not be having kids, but maybe your kids will. And you just don't know. Right. And then all of a sudden, you got this child who comes into your life, and how do I deal with, or, you know, and help this child grow and be the best person he or she can be?
Right. Right.
And that's sort of gets, you know, starts right from there.
So I was, so that was pretty gratifying to get that testimonial and to know that I might be helping those children.
Nice. Okay. Now, do you have other works? And because you started a publishing company, you know, and big success with this one here. And you know, there, does that spur you to maybe look at some other works? What are you kind of delving into?
Well, my husband, who will be coming up next at 1:30, I published his book, and he'll talk to you about that and how that came to be. The publishing that I had done was a lot of work for doctors, particularly dentists and periodontists. And I had done a lot of brochures and newsletters for them. And one of my clients in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, I helped him publish two books, one of them A Patient's Guide to Periodontal Disease and Dental Implants, and then A Clinician's Guide to Oral Diseases and How to Treat Them. And those two books were published in the last 2 years, and we're into our second editions with those. So those have, and they're technical books of a clinical nature. The patient's book would be in more layperson's terms so that they could understand what's going on in their mouths, but and those have been a lot of fun to publish and work with him on those, and so. And then I have my own book, which I started in 2001 when my husband and I went to Africa to climb Kilimanjaro. We met a woman in Arusha at the base of Kilimanjaro who is actually in, well, it wasn't in Arusha, it was at the Marengo Hotel, where who we used as an outfitter. And they were supporting her. She was an English attorney who had left her position in England and gone to the Kilimanjaro area to help rebuild the schools. And her story about how that all happened is very interesting. And she was in the process of rebuilding the physical plant in the schools. Many of them were just mud and wattle, basically huts and dark, and no, they had one window maybe. And so she went about making them bright, whitewashing the insides, upgrading the desks the students were sitting in, planting flowers outside, covering the outside of it because it rains during the rainy season all the time, and so it would make it real muddy. And so she would cover that so that it was cleaner inside. And then she's kind of a female Greg Mortensen, if you're familiar with The Three Cups of Tea.
Oh, one of my favorite books. Book. It's a powerful story.
And she is doing basically the same thing in the Kilimanjaro area. And then she's since expanded to Rwanda. But she not only upgraded the physical plants, but she also helped upgrade the teaching, the education that the teachers were getting so that they could be better teachers. Mm-hmm. In many cases, they were basically babysitters in the schools. And so she enacted a whole program to upgrade the whole teacher education program in Tanzania. So, but I have had a lot of other, life has gotten in the way, things that have come up during those years, and so I haven't gotten back to it. And then, you know, these other projects came along, and so, but it is something that I want to get back to and, and publish myself. It's my own work that I have written, and interviews with her. Uh-huh.
What's exciting for me, and first of all, sitting here talking to you, because had you not gone down the rabbit hole with Where's My Football, and I hadn't gone down the rabbit hole with Sisyphus Wins, we would not be talking. We wouldn't even know each other.
That's right? True.
Okay. And so that gets you into other adventures there, too. So now you not only have a far better grasp on the complexity of publishing, you have a far better grasp on the complexity of children's stories themselves. also related to particularly our A with that focus on that one group there called boys, little boys, but also children with disabilities. So little kids with disabilities, so mm-hmm. autism, for example. So you're becoming more aware, and you know, maybe not an expert, but still, you're far more cognizant of it than the general public there. And then you have these other adventures. You mentioned, what's her name from England?
It's Katie Allen.
Katie Allen. And what an incredible story. And you make the connection with Greg Mortensen's work, Three Cups of Tea, and it's brilliant. You know, to me, that's what the journey. This is Joseph Campbell stuff.
It is, isn't it?
You're on an amazing journey here. It is.
It is.
Wow. Yeah. And it's just and where does it go next, right? You know, so.
Well, who knows?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. And you just get up in the morning, because if you don't get up and get out and go and do, you don't participate actively in life, it's going to pass you by.
That's right.
And you just don't know when that synchronistic moment's going to happen.
That's right.
And it's happening.
Well,
now.
One of the things that happened that on the Where's My Football journey that I was totally surprised at is the book has won 3 literary awards.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. It was Moonbeam's best. Let me see, where can I find it? Well, it won the Moonbeam Award for best children's book by an author under the age of 18.
Mm-hmm. Creative Child Magazine.
Best Board Book of the Year.
Okay.
And it also won a SIPA Evie Merit Award.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got Patrick there.
So that was very gratifying to have won those awards for Maraid.
Yeah.
To have won those awards.
Okay. Well, having gone down here, best moment in the whole process.
Oh, working with my granddaughter. Absolutely. I mean, it was a bonding experience that I'll never forget. And, she still talks about the book, and you know, I think it's been a really gratifying for her that she had a book published that she had written.
Now, right?
She's 20 now. She's
a
junior at California Polytechnic Institute in San Luis Obispo. So. But I know she had an internship this summer in Escondido, and she talked to some of her fellow workers about it, and they bought the book. And so mm-hmm. I think she's – so absolutely the experience working with her on it was mm-hmm. – and that bonding experience was, as a grandmother, of course, the most gratifying.
Wonderful. And for Maraid also, you never know, whatever life, you know,
right.
she chooses. But maybe one day she'll have kids, and you never know. You know, this whole thing
right.
and who she's going to, you know. So
right.
this thing starts taking in roots that you just can't even imagine.
But I am also gratified that it might be a beginning tool to help little boys enjoy mm-hmm. and learn how to read, and that it might help children on the autism spectrum.
That's a really neat.
Those two things are also extremely gratifying to me. So
yeah, and you just don't know where that's going to go as well. Like you talked to Shannon out there. And so mom, dad comes in, picks up the book, and next thing you know, we're over here again. Right. And so you touch so many different lives in so many ways, you just don't even know.
I know. I had one person come and tell me that their daughter-in-law, their granddaughter, had been injured in an automobile accident and had lost her baby as a result. And she came up and she said, I want to get this book for her because I think that this might help her heal.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had a little boy already
mm-hmm.
That was this age, or 2 or 3 years old, and then she lost the child she was carrying. And so she said that she had thought that this might help her granddaughter heal. And so, I mean, it's just I've had so much positive feedback from people about the book in ways I never imagined.
Right.
You know, like I said, I thought it would be just be a fun little book for little kids, and it's turned out to be more meaningful than that.
Yeah, and you just don't know, and I know from my own personal experience publishing, putting out my book, is that the ones you think might connect, or, yeah, it's maybe just this, and then you start getting feedback from people that, in a way that you never thought when you were putting the book together. And these are examples of it there. And it just absolutely becomes mind-blowing. And you go like, okay, maybe I need to keep going then, right?
Right.
Yeah. So if people want to get a copy of the book, they want to get a hold of you.
Well, it's available on Amazon. And they can go to my website, wheresmyfootball.com, and order it directly from me locally here in Denver. I'm actually in Lakewood. And it's also available at 32nd Avenue Books, Toys, and Gifts in Wheatridge. Okay. So,
and for those locally or coming to visit over the winter holidays, and to it's going to be available right here in Clear Creek.
That's right, at the Georgetown Christmas Fair Book Nook.
There you go.
The first two weekends of December.
Yeah.
It's also going to be available at the Colorado Authors League booth at the Christmas Fair at the Merchandise Mart the first weekend of November. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah. What a delightful gift. You know, for a little boy, you know, I call them stocking stuffers for Christmas. What better?
Right.
Well, right now, we know that reading has just become, I'll put it this way, under assault because of video and everything out there. And we're so busy and everything.
Right.
But the best thing is if we can get people back to use, you know, the visual cortex, you know, to like, okay, to read this and start interpreting, because you and I can read the same story. We do it all the time, and we interpret it differently.
Right.
Okay, so like when you were talking about little Johnny over there, you know, with his curiosity and persistence, but also what came to mind for me is problem solving.
Yes. There absolutely.
So what did I pick up from the story? Yeah. And I haven't read it, but I'm like, well, he's problem solving here too. Well, I've done this, done that, you know.
Right, right.
You know, so that's the best way is just, you know, if you don't put a book in a kid's hands, they're not going to read.
Well, and it's so important to getting a job, you know, to be able to read, especially with our technologically oriented society.
Well, yeah. So. Yeah, yeah, and I have stories on that too from the teaching world, but we won't go there.
Okay. Another time.
Another time. And thank you so much for coming
in. Well, thank you, Jerry. It's been a real pleasure. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and you just learned so much, you know, in the whole process in ways that we don't even imagine until we start talking about
that's
them.
Right.
Right on. Okay. All right, everyone. This is Jerry Fabian, KYGT, LPFM 102.7, 103.9. Been visiting here with Ann Nye West about her efforts on the book, you know, Where's My Football? So you can, you know, check that out there just by simply going to wheresmyfootball.com.
That's right.
Yeah, and learn more about that. And then if you want to contact Ann, there's contact information on there, and she can tell you all about if you want to get down that rabbit hole with the rest of us here and putting out a work. Well, we got a couple pros here who can tell you all about that fun stuff there. All right, we're going to take a little bit of music interlude here and be back in a little while, and we're going to be talking to her husband, Jim, about his work, Topo Maps. Okay, here we go.